Cops usually spend their time dealing with random people they'll never see again. What happens when instead, cops are forced to battle their own ethics and arrest their co-workers?
I'm not drunk, I'm fucking passed out, I'm tired.
I know, I'm sorry.
Starting with Corporal Scott. On January 1st, 2021, Gainesville police were called to the scene of a crash that took place in a parking lot. But the responding officer, Brooke, had no idea who was waiting for her.
And you are... Silver car?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. If you want to go back over there, I'll come get your info in just a second.
All right.
So,
yeah, reached out for my lighter, slammed into his ass.
Cool.
Yeah, not really.
Not really.
Yeah.
He didn't want to do an information exchange?
So he does. Now I found it.
Brooke and Scott are clearly familiar with each other, and when Scott described how the incident happened, making it clear he's at fault, Brooke decides to check with her higher-ups before moving forward with the situation, fearing a conflict of interest.
Hey, this crash, Birdie, so come work it? Okay. I can't remember. It's been a long time since I've worked a crash with one of us in it, so... No, he's not on duty. He's in his POV. But I just didn't want there to be any, like, conflict of interest type issues. All right. That was it. I just wanted to make sure.
Brooke gets the green light and is told there shouldn't be any problems with her handling the case. But that changes when she notices Scott's impaired state during the investigation.
So, Birdie, you giving me some indicators?
Oh.
Listen.
Shit, woman.
Listen. Valdez is coming out just to... I'm not going to lie to you about it.
She's on her way?
Yeah, she's on her way.
376-1087.
Because I'm not really comfortable with this whole thing at all. Right now, you're being detained.
Wait, what?
I'm holding on to you because I have a supervisor coming to see if I need to do a full-fledged DUI investigation or not.
Dr. Lawyer, CPD Channel 1, Explorer 1003, all units, go back on Channel 1, 3.9 hours.
So please don't make my life difficult.
I would never do that to you.
Okay. I'm very uncomfortable right now.
And I apologize for putting you in that position. Are you on?
Yes, I am. And I'm going to remain on for integrity.
Despite the uncomfortable situation, the officer does the right thing and detains Scott. You can tell he was not happy about it, and things might have gone differently if there was no body cam involved. Coworker or not, Scott is now a suspect, and his bad night is just getting started.
I'm not drunk, I'm fucking passed out, I'm tired.
Fuck me.
She did it, I don't give a fuck.
Here, I'm gonna go find stuff. Okay.
She wants to do DUI, do it. And I can put you in that spot, I can put her in that
723.
Spot.
She made me aware of who it was.
Go ahead.
So.
Well aware.
Okay.
Fair enough.
If we have any spare units,
I will never
up here, the entire web, I think it's
put anyone in that spot.
Three people from his crew that are.
She's absolutely 100% right in what she's doing.
You can't consume anything. You're killing me.
I'm trying.
Come on.
With the supervisor now arriving at the scene, they can proceed with the field sobriety tests. The first one went smoothly for Scott. However, once they got to the balance test, it became obvious that Scott wasn't just a little impaired that night, but completely hammered.
14.
You can stop.
Fucking perfect.
So at this time... I'm asking you to come with me to the station to provide a breath sample.
It was obvious Scott was hitting the bottle that night, and when it was time to put the cuffs on him, things got a little emotional.
There's things that we can do to fix this,
buddy.
That is for my kids, my family, fucking everything. I'm sorry, you too.
You're fine.
No,
absolutely.
I'm fine. I'm sorry.
No, you're not these people. It's fine.
You're okay.
But we already know what the game plan is.
Even though Scott showed regret for his actions, he is still a criminal that put many lives in danger.
Pause if you're at the front seat.
No.
No, that's fine. Take them around to your driver's side.
Yeah.
There you go.
Listen to me.
Put them on.
I'm not going to help you.
Oh, yes, you are, because they're watching.
No.
Yes, you are. They're watching.
We'll cuff you over by my car.
Yes, you will.
Yes. Yes.
You've been compliant. Can I at least cuff you in the front?
Scott's insistence on being cuffed shows that at least he's not trying to exploit his position as a law enforcement officer and is willing to take responsibility for his actions. It's almost like he wanted to punish himself for what he did. Once they arrived at the police station, Scott was physically distressed and emotional, clearly regretting what he did.
I'm very sorry. Did I put you in this place? I'm sorry.
Listen, if you blow and you're good, then we're golden.
Yeah.
You know I can't do that.
I can't demonstrate FSEs. Literally.
I know, but you also have nystagmus.
Oh, I know. Well, I'm not saying I haven't been.
Yeah.
No, I'm not gonna. I mean, you're doing what you got to do.
Yeah.
You're good.
Yeah, it's a lot different when they ask you in an interview saying, hey, you know, what would you do if this happened to.
I know. You're kidding. Believe me. So proud. And so sorry, all at the same time.
You're gonna make me cry.
Even though Scott proved to be one of the most polite and respectful suspects we've ever encountered, his luck took a different turn once he hit the breathalyzer test. Scott blew a 0.156 alcohol blood level, nearly twice the legal limit. Scott was charged with one count of driving under the influence with property damage, and he pleaded no contest to the charge. He was sentenced to nearly $1,000 in fines, 50 hours of community service, substance abuse and DUI classes, and a 6-month driver's license suspension. At least Scott didn't hurt anyone, a stark contrast with the next cop who tried to conceal his brother's murderous crimes. July 2nd, 2011 was an ordinary day for Alexander Kuchevik until he was shot right outside his home. Turns out he was a big shot in the cocaine and weapons game, and to top it off, he had a secret identity due to being in the witness protection program. The number one suspect for his murder was a man named Michael. 3 days after the murder, Daniel bought him a plane ticket to Italy. Things are understandably extremely suspicious to the investigating cops, so they decide to bring in their fellow officer Daniel for questioning regarding the whole situation.
We're investigating an allegation of murder. As part of our investigation into the offense, I'd like to interview you on tape under oath. It is a crime in Canada to lie to the police or mislead them in an investigation. It's also a crime in Canada to falsely accuse another person of committing a crime. Do you understand that?
Yes.
Do you understand that if you lie to the police, you could be charged with an offense?
Yes.
Daniel appears calm and collected as they gear up for the questioning process. Being an officer himself, he's familiar with the drill, and that can obviously pose a challenge for the investigators.
What can you tell me about anything you know about this incident?
To be honest, not much. All I know is that my brother was apparently dating his wife.
Okay, when you say your brother, who's your brother?
Mike.
Michael Costa.
Michael Costa.
Who was he dating?
Anita. That's all I know. Her name is Anita. I met her maybe 3 times. That's all I've known. That's all what I've seen on the news.
Did you know she was married?
No, not until recently.
When did you find out she was married?
Saturday night.
Okay. So tell me what happened Saturday night.
I received a call from my brother, Michael, saying he wanted to come over and speak to me. Came over, started crying, telling me somebody is after him. I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. Said somebody's after him, somebody's after him. He said, watch the news. Somebody got killed. That's Anita's husband. And that's when he told me that he's been dating her and that she was married.
What have you talked about?
What the hell is going on? He won't tell me what's going on. All he said is that this guy was killed And they might be after me because I've been dating his wife.
And that's everything Daniel claims to know about the situation. But the detective is not buying it for even a second.
So your brother comes to you, says, watch the news. The guy's been murdered, shot and killed outside his house in Woodbridge. Your brother comes, says, I'm dating that guy's wife, Anita, who you know as Anita.
Is that even her name?
Her name's Anita, yes. Okay, so she comes to your house. He says, people are after me. You're a police officer. You're allowing this guy to come to your house, yet you know nothing about what he's involved in. Yet there's a guy lying on the street that's been killed. And you're saying, yeah, come to my house. I got my wife here.
It's my brother. Yeah. I'm not going to leave him on the street.
But you're going to ask him what the heck happened.
Yeah, but he didn't tell me. All he says is, you know, he got killed in front of the house, and that was it.
Are you not concerned that maybe that threat's now moved to your place?
Yes, I am. That's why I haven't slept in the last 2 days.
So therefore, wouldn't you just nail down on your brother as to what happened? Well, tell me that. Did you try?
I did. I asked him. He kept saying, somebody's after me. I don't know why. The only excuse he gave me was that he's dating me, and that was it.
So what are the chances your brother's going to tell you what's going on?
Very slim.
Why is that?
Because he hasn't in the last 4 days, three Thursday.
So he's going to stay living at your house?
No.
Hiding out?
After he left.
Possibly bringing that threat to your place for you and your wife?
After he left here, he arrived at my house in a cab, grabbed his bag and left. So I don't even know where he is now.
This is where Daniel first slips up. Like many lies, Daniel's claim of not knowing his brother's whereabouts seems foolish. Records clearly show that he used his credit card to purchase a plane ticket to Italy under Michael's name, so that one isn't going to work.
I interviewed your brother earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
He was not truthful.
As to what?
As to his role in this investigation.
Okay.
Not being truthful, and he's not, when I ask him a question, who is that person, he would not say who it was. So what are we going to do now?
I don't know. I don't know where he is. After, like I said, after he left here, he showed up in a cab, grabbed his bag, and he said, I'm sorry, I got you in trouble. He goes, give me your card. He said, they're going to call you. So I was waiting for your call. And he left. And I don't know where the hell he went.
Despite putting Michael on a plane that very same day, he claims he has no idea where his brother is. This guy seems to believe that if he sticks to his lies and acts like he knows nothing, the detectives will eventually give up and cut him loose. But the detectives are determined to get to the bottom of things.
Did your brother ever tell you that he knew Alex?
No.
When he came over to your house, did he say?
Said he's a bad guy. That's it. What is a bad guy? He's a bad guy.
You're a cop.
I know. You can only assume. I don't know. I've never even seen. I don't even know what he looks like. I don't know. Could be a biker. It could be a thing. I don't know. What's a bad guy? Bad guy. There's all kinds of shitheads. Everybody's a bad guy. But for him to be scared as he was, I figure it's got to be something bad. So,
mm-hmm.
And now you're telling me he's a major criminal. So.
Okay. So you've got this major criminal that's not been gunned down. I mean, come on, you're a cop. Guy gets shot outside of his house. It's a hit. And your brother's running scared? You don't put two and two together?
I didn't know that this guy's a major criminal.
Okay. Even so, some guy gets gunned down and your brother's running from it. You're not putting two and two together.
What am I supposed to say? What am I supposed to think?
What are you going to say? You're going to ask him, what the hell's going on?
I did.
You're in my home bringing this to my family, putting my life in jeopardy, my wife's life in jeopardy. Word on the street is your brother's moving some big stuff around. He's a big man on the street. You don't question your brother. He's driving around in a $100,000 car. You go to the clubs with him?
No.
He's always at the clubs.
Okay.
Does he tell you that?
Yeah, I know he's downtown. He's always at the clubs.
Okay. And what's he doing?
I don't know. I don't ask him everything he does every night.
He's your brother.
I know.
You guys not close?
We are, but he doesn't give me every detail of his life.
You're telling me your brother riding around in a $100,000 skate, and you don't ask him what's going on? Where are you getting that kind of cash? Business is that good?
Apparently.
And you just slide by. That's fine with me.
Detective Cook really pushes Daniel to spill on why he couldn't get answers from his brother. But this is where he slipped up big time.
Daniel, I find this very hard to believe. And the fact that you're a police officer and you're not putting two and two together.
What am I supposed to do? I'm going to go and accuse him of different stuff?
You never accuse your kid brother of being messed up in something?
I told him he's an idiot once I found out he's dating a freaking married woman. But
and that's it. And he's running for his life after her husband's been gunned down. And you're saying, yeah, it's fine. Stay in my house for 4 days?
I'm not going to say go out and wait for somebody to attack you.
No, you're going to say, tell me what the hell's going on, and then we're going to the cops.
Yeah, in retrospect, I probably should have done that.
So you're putting your life, your wife's life, in jeopardy your career in jeopardy. But you won't ask the questions of your brother?
I asked. He didn't answer. There's only so many times I can ask without him getting pissed off and leaving like he did today. He's gone.
He didn't get pissed off at you for leaving.
No, but he's pissed off that he got everything involved.
Involved in what?
In this.
Apparently, you don't know anything about this.
No, I don't. You're giving me information now that I... What the hell? You know my head's spinning right now?
But you're his brother.
Yes.
All this has been happening. He's dating the wife of a guy that gets gunned down in front of his house. And you don't ask the questions. So you're putting yourself in a lot of jeopardy. Yeah, he's your brother. You're telling me I don't know anything about what my brother does. Yeah, you might want to be protecting him.
Even if Daniel was really this clueless, the detectives don't understand why he didn't try to find out what had happened. After all, he's a cop. It's in his nature.
Anybody who runs after a homicide, doesn't cooperate with the police, is now gone. We don't know where he is. What does that tell you?
I don't know. I don't know what you want me to say. It doesn't look good.
Your brother comes to your house, says, yeah, watch the news. Watch the news? Tell me what the fuck's going on. You're running because a guy got killed? And you're saying that's all right, just sleep on my couch for 4 days? You're not putting any of this together.
The detective hits Daniel where it hurts, his pride. Cook suggests that he might not be a great cop for not suspecting his own brother's involvement. This tactic is particularly effective with men who have big egos, as they can't stand the idea of looking incompetent, even if it means admitting something that could implicate them. It's a clever move to shake things up, and you can see the frustration start to seep out of Daniel.
Are you understanding the magnitude of this?
Yes.
This is a homicide.
I know.
You seem pretty calm about the whole thing.
I'm not calm. Believe me, I'm not calm.
I don't know if I do believe you, because you're going on about this. Say, well, I asked him and, well, he didn't tell me. I'm thinking you're protecting him. As his older brother, you're protecting him.
I don't know anything to protect him from.
Well, did he come to you and confide in you? That's what I'm...
No.
That's what I know that he's done. He's gone and he's got to tell somebody. Can't keep the weight of this on his shoulders forever.
How do you even know he did it?
I'm not saying he did it.
So why would he have to confide in me if he didn't do it? Or have the weight on his shoulders if he didn't do something.
He didn't have the weight on his shoulders if he didn't do something. He wouldn't have run.
If he's scared somebody's going to be killing him, yeah, I would run to
him. If someone's going to kill you, who do you go to?
Police.
Yeah?
Or your family, and I'm both.
Yeah? And then he's gone from there. Nobody's going to have to go after him because he's banging the wife. That doesn't even make sense. You're after Buddy Boy. They got him. They're not going to go, okay, so let's go after everybody that's banging him. They'd probably shake his hand. Way to go. You're screwing the guy's wife behind his back. Yeah, we didn't like him either. If you have nothing to hide, you're around. You got something to hide, you go to ground, you're gone.
Detective Cook challenges Daniel's story, stating that if he's innocent, he should stick around. But if he's guilty, he'll go into hiding.
If he has information about this murder, that's why he's running. He's banging other guys. We talked to them. They're not running. Yeah, I was banging her. Her husband's a fucking big dope dealer. Hey, they're not saying, oh yeah, we're scared. You know, what are we scared for? The guy's dead. He's never going to find out who's banging his wife. Because if you have knowledge of any of this, you have to tell us. Because if we find out later that you knew, you know what happens.
Absolutely.
All right. Don't jeopardize your family and your career over this. Is there anything else that I should know to understand your statement fully?
No.
The detective has given Daniel a heads up about the potential consequences, laying out all he could lose. But he seems to have made his decision, and it looks like he's sticking to it, regardless of the risks. The day after this interview, Daniel did a complete 180 and admitted to not only lying, but also to unauthorized searches of police records to aid his brother. On September 16th, 2016, Daniel pleaded guilty to perjury and insubordination, and was given a week to resign. However, he managed to flip the script on appeal, somehow landing only a penalty of suspension, demotion, and pay cut. Michael avoided charges, but on November 13th, 2020, he was non-fatally shot outside of a cafe, surviving without any arrests made.